Blog Talk Radio.
I had a dream the other night that, well, I didn't understand. A figure walked in through the mist with a flintlock in his hand. His clothes were torn and dirty as he stood there by my bed. He took off his three-cornered hat, and speaking low to me, he said, "We fought a revolution to secure our liberty. We wrote the Constitution as a shield from tyranny. For future generations, this legacy we gave. In this, the land of the free and home of the brave. The freedoms we secured for you, we hoped you'd always keep. But tyrants labored endlessly while your parents were asleep. Your freedom's gone, your courage lost, you're no more than a slave. In this, the land of the free and home of the brave. You buy permits to travel and permits to own a gun, permits to start a business or to build a place for one. On land that you believe you own, you pay a yearly rent, although you have no voice in saying how the money's spent. Your children must attend a school that doesn't educate, and your Christian values can't be taught according to the state. You read about the current news in a regulated press, and you pay a tax you do not owe to please the IRS. Your money is no longer made of silver nor of gold. You trade your wealth for paper so your life can be controlled. You pay for crimes that make our nation turn from God in shame. You've taken Satan's number. You've traded in your name. You've given government control to those who do you harm, so they could burn down churches and seize the family farm and keep our country deep in debt, put men of God in jail, harass your fellow countrymen while corrupted courts prevail. Your public servants don't uphold the solemn oaths they've sworn, and your daughters visit doctors so their children won't be born. Your leaders send artillery and guns to foreign shores and send your sons to slaughter fighting other people's wars. Can you regain the freedoms for which we fought and died? Or don't you have the courage or the faith to stand with pride? And are there no more values for which you'll fight to save? Or do you wish your children to live in fear and be a slave? Oh, sons of the Republic, arise, take a stand. Defend the Constitution, the supreme law of the land. Preserve our great republic and each God-given right. And pray to God to keep the torch of freedom burning bright. As I awoke, he'd vanished in the mist from whence he came. His words were true. We are not free, but we have ourselves to blame. For even now, as tyrants trample each God-given right, we only watch and tremble, too afraid to stand and fight. If he stood by your bedside in a dream while you were asleep, and wondered what remains of the freedoms he'd fought to keep, what would be your answer if he called out from the grave, "Is this still the land of the free and home of the brave?" God bless you, and God bless this republic.
America fear their government, and the government is being run by too many powerful agencies like the IRS and others. I think it's time the people take the country back through their representative government.
Hey, Mr. Politician, living on that hill. Living in that lap of luxury, on We the People's Bill. Don't have a clue how the other
Welcome to the Jim Dunzing Show, featuring opinions so good they ought to be yours. Here is to begin the broadcast day on Freedomizer Radio, www.freedomizerradio.com. Go there, scroll down about halfway down the page. There is a chat room there full of activity. Join that discussion. Sometimes it relates to the show, sometimes it does not. Enjoy both. Also there on the left side of the page, you will see a link to listen live to the broadcast and a link to select archives. It is September 11th, 2012, the 11th anniversary of the false flag attacks on America and our freedom. Like most of you, I'll bet, unless Rudy Giuliani is listening, I remember exactly where I was when I learned of the attacks in New York. And I'll bet the same is true of all of you, although some key people in our government have forgotten exactly where they were at those crucial times. I was sitting, of all places, in a class on legal ethics, like a class on round squares. But there I sat in the back of the room, and when I went to law school, I lived about a block away from the law school. And my morning routine was to get up about 5 minutes before or after class and get myself there as quickly as possible. And on this morning, I didn't turn on the news, like normal. I simply walked to class and sat down in the back. And a friend of mine who had worked in the World Trade Centers told me that a plane had flew into one of the towers, knocked it over. And I remember having a discussion with him about how the building fell over, about whether it tipped over and fell onto the ground. And she said, no, it fell straight down. And I knew from the investigations I had done into other mysterious collapses, like that of the Murrah building, that the most difficult thing to do with a building is to what they call in the industry smokestack it and have it come straight down on its own footprint. That was relevant to the Oklahoma City bombing, of course, because the fertilizer bomb, they say, was in front of the building that went somehow magically through the Liberty Tree without harming the small little tree and then blew up the building. The pattern of destruction is completely inconsistent with that kind of bomb. The columns closest to the truck were least injured. The columns furthest away, which coincidentally are positioned over the top of the ATF or F troops or FBI, or I think it was ATF's offices, that column happened to be completely destroyed. the columns closer to the rider truck were not touched. Now, you can explain that phenomenon, but not with an exterior bomb, only with interior charges. And they stopped the investigation on that, and when they found three switched military-grade explosive demolitions devices inside the building. At any rate, my study of that information had made sure that smokestacking a building was the most difficult thing to do in engineering. Was built. The most difficult way to bring it down. And it made no sense to me that a plane, even a commercial airplane flying into those buildings would knock over that many of floors. I remember being very young now, probably 12, flying Cousins simulator, airplane simulator, which was state-of-the-art at the time. And I think I took it off from O'Hare and flew it directly into the Chiefs Tower. Not on purpose, just because that's how skilled I was as a 12-year-old pilot. Probably more skilled than those folks who couldn't land a Cessna. I'll bet you if I'd have went up in a Cessna, I could have landed it. With his help, of course. But as part of that, I had a discussion with him about the buildings and being constructed because they were so high and they were worried about pilots hitting them. They were constructed to withstand airplane hits, all modern skyscrapers. And indeed, as I later found out, the World Trade Center towers 1, 2, and 7, although it wasn't hit by a plane, those towers were designed to withstand not just one but multiple airplane hits. Their lattice structure on the outside of the building is like a screen. This video used to be on Nova, but it disappeared, and I think it's reappeared since copies of it surfaced on YouTube. The lattice structure on the outside of the building is like a screen door. And if you push a pencil through a screen door, the screen door doesn't go away. You just have a hole there. The building was designed with all those independent structures on the outside of the building to support it. It was supported. It could be supported just by the outside structure and also just by the interior structure. It was over-engineered as the highest building of the day. And about, so we continued class. It was no big deal at that point. About maybe 30 minutes later into class, somebody who had been watching in the student union, the television news, came in and interrupted the class and said, the second tower and it was at that point that I just had one of those gut sensations that we were dealing with another Oklahoma City. The facts that I had about it didn't add up already. And when I see large acts of mass destruction and terror and killing, I tend to look at those people, one, who could do it, and two, who I know have done it in the past. And so my first instinct and reaction was to think this was another false flag like Oklahoma City. But we remained in class for the duration of the class, finished out the class. The professor later apologized to us for finishing the class because of the gravity of the situation. But after class, I went home and I watched the coverage. And I watched the top 30 or 40 floors of, I think, the South Tower This was on replay, of course, over and over and over again. They took it off, not because me and me were having questions, because of how angry it made us as a Muslim, officially anyway. The top 30 or 40 floors of power began to tip clean and fall off the side of the building. And when they were at about a 30-degree or maybe more, greater than 30-degree angle, with a significant amount of momentum, and the tops of those buildings sway quite a bit. If you ever have been on the Sears Tower, on the top floor, the building moves with the wind back and forth. Right. And so did the Twin Tower. And so they naturally have a sway to them. And on this particular instant, they had a sway to them and it was starting to fall off the side of the building. Because of that natural sway they would have, the columns and such destroyed inside, the building started to, the top of the building started to fall off the rest of the building. At that point, for no reason that Newton can ever explain, no reason that even your theoretical physicists at MIT and Harvard can explain, the building dropped straight down. And 30 or 40 floors were falling off to the side, straightened up, and fell straight down the building. As if the bottom had been cut out beneath them, and they fell down faster than they could fall off the side. At that point, I knew those buildings were demolished. There was no question at that point, but the explosives had to be used. And I still wasn't convinced at that point that it was an inside job, because terrorists could use explosives very quickly that day, very quickly. They already knew who the guilty parties were. Now, I was slated later that day, right after that class, in fact, was to go straight to my internship at the federal prosecutor's office. That building was closed for the day, so I didn't go there. Instead, I took one of the rifles I had, put it behind the seat of my pickup truck, and drove the 45 minutes or an hour or so from my law school campus to my parents' house and watched the rest of the coverage there. Now, before that, I had actually made a phone call and spoken to my father and described to him the strange way the building fell down. He was in Chicago at the time doing some work. Told him he'd want to get back home as soon as possible, which he started on his way as soon as that was possible. And I'm standing in my parents' living room, my brother, who is about a year younger than I am, and at the time was a lieutenant of the local fire department. And we're watching the building still on replay fall down. And the thing that caught my brother's eye was he said, "See that smoke?" "Yeah." The black smoke coming out of the towers off the top of the building. "Yes, so?" He says, now remember, he's my younger brother, so I've got a natural bit of skepticism when he says something. He says, "That black smoke means the fire is oxygen starved." I thought that was ludicrous. I said, "You can't look my parents." The house is fairly high, and we can, from the living room, see over the top of several houses. I said, "You can't look out the window here and see a house over there on fire and tell me what kind of fire it is because of the color of the smoke." He said, "Sure you can." And then he went through a list of the kind of chemical fires and such have different colors. I don't remember any of it now. But the different kind of fires and the different colors you can have. But black smoke is an oxygen-starved fire. It means it's going out. He had a very high level of knowledge of those kind of chemical fires. But every fireman knows about black smoke, meaning oxygen stuff. And on TV at that point, they were saying the fires were just too hot. Mark Adrian Humphreys, best known as the Harley Davidson guy, interviewed on the street a Fox correspondent. You remember him from Iron Eagle 2. Remember that movie where the kids go and fly the F-16s to some Middle East country and take back one of the kids' dads who was shot down? With Chappie Sinclair leading the way, Louis Gossett Jr., well, they made a sequel to that. And in the sequel, the Russians and the Americans worked together on some secret program. And the opening scene of that is the main character from the first movie getting killed. And his wingman was Mark Adrian Humphreys. That was the extent of his acting career. He had some other B roles, CIA operatives, and some kind of, you know, whenever they needed a guy to play a government agent, got him in some B movies and such to play a government agent. And there's a scene in Iron Eagle 2 where you can see this guy standing, waiting for Louis Gossett Jr.'s character to come over and talk to him. They're standing in some airfield or something. He's standing with his feet wide apart, his hands on his hips. And then you can watch the Fox News coverage of their independent correspondent. I forget the term they use to describe this guy. But this is minutes after the attack. Everybody's worried about lives lost. They're traumatized, not emotionally traumatized from what they have just seen. This guy is describing a sporting contest he saw. He's totally unemotional about it. He says the plane, he saw the plane from his apartment flying. While you're waiting, you can see him in that stance. That he took in Iron Eagle 2, waiting for the reporter to come and talk to him. That he saw the plane go in and through the building, and then he saw the building come down, mostly because of structural failure, but the fires were just too hot. He did have a Harley Davidson T-shirt on. So he must know about hot metal. But good researchers have done good jobs and found that this is that was Mark Adrian Humphreys playing a role. But that was the scientific basis for the mass popular that interviewed on Fox and repeated over and over on the other networks. That was the basis of the scientific report, like from this. Let's say the building fell from fire. That guy, Mark Adrian Humphrey, was bringing forth from making public the secret government's version of events. His job was to be interviewed and speak in code to the rest of the folks and indicate what the official position of the secret government to be. That's how. That's why BBC announced the collapse of Building 7 20 minutes before it happened. Towers 1 and 2 fell, and then around they fell by 9:30. One of them fell at 9:00. The other one may have fell earlier or later. I don't remember. They fell in the morning, though, within 45 minutes of each other. And then Building 7 fell around 5 o'clock that evening after a radio countdown of the emergency radio. 10, 9, 8, 7, 6, 5, 4, 3, 2, 1. And then miracle, all miracles, a building that was not hit by a plane collapses on its own footprint at the rate of gravity. Indeed, by some amateur video who documented it, it was dropped faster than the rate of gravity. There was a guy who had his own, he was the forefront of internet video, and he was doing streaming movies and stuff in 2001. And it was stuff that he thought was important, like Skylines, and for some reason he had all his camera equipment and making these videos. And he was set up, I don't remember if he was set up for a shoot at that location before any of this happened. I don't think so. I think once heard that on the news that this was happening, grabbed his equipment and went to the far side of the shore, Jersey side of the shore, and shot across to the towers just to get video of it, because that's what he does. And they linked up his video with the sound from the explosion. You could hear the explosions on his camera and see the delay for the building. So, and you could see it fall straight down. And using his long-distance camera, you can measure the height of the building at every frame and compare it on the way down with the height of the other building and get a very, very clear picture of how fast the building fell. Now, the part that fell faster than gravity was the part in the center that buckled first. And there was actually a vacuum created as that buckled. And then the sides kind of fell in as they fell straight down so that they wouldn't fall outside. That's how they keep it inside the foundation of the building. Now, much later on, learned about Barry Jennings. Barry Jennings was a worker in Building 7. Not just a worker. He had some, and I forget the position anymore, but some high position within the building. It was director of something. I think it had even to do with local city transportation. I'm not certain. Safe yet. Forget. But he was in the building. And he was talking to the fireman when the towers collapsed. And they came to deal with the towers and then came back to 7. And the other tower collapsed. They left and came back to 7. And they walked him out of the building. And they told him when they got to the lobby not to look down. But they were helping him step over things. And he said he knew he was stepping over bodies. Then several hours later, the building collapsed. The building footprint lost were multi-billion dollar, maybe even trillion dollar, at least $100 billion investigations into large corporations. All the investigations the SEC were doing, all the records for them, vanished. It's a mysterious collapse. And all those hundreds of billions of dollars were now saved. And several people died. Rudolph Giuliani, it is my belief, was in Building 7 for a good portion of September 11th. I believe until at least Tower 1 was collapsed. That was his command center. Indeed, it was the building housed the Federal Emergency Management Agency's operation. It was the spot Giuliani designated to go in an emergency. It was his command center in Building 7. I believe he was in there. I believe he was responsible for igniting the collapse of the South Tower. The top floors of that building started to fall off. The fires were going through the firemen. They released this years later. Years later they released this, but there was audio transcripts that made. The firemen were reporting back, the fires are out. They're setting up a triage on the 40th. The fires are handled. They're out. We don't need any more people for the fires. We need people. We have several dead bodies up here. We have several critical conditions up here. Those are the people we need on floor 42. That's where we set up an emergency care center. That was all happening right before our collapse because the fires were too hot. And the top of those buildings started to fall off the side. Somebody gave the green light to drop the demolition charges because they couldn't have the top stories of those buildings fall off the side and keep their pre-planned conspiracy theory about the pancakes. They weren't ready to blow it at the time, but the fires were out. The New York Fire Department, I think, did better. The secret government gave them credit for, and they put the fires out before they thought they'd be out. And somebody greenlit that building, the explosives being detonated by a very sophisticated computer-controlled setup involving thermite charges on the tower. I believe that somebody was Rudolph Giuliani. He was in the position to do it, and he's in the position in the secret government to be entrusted with that responsibility. We're going to be right back after this short break and continue our discussion of September 11th and get into why it's still relevant today. And hint, it's because the secret government is still in charge, and they're still using this bullshit excuse as a reason to continue to hate and take your freedom, advancing their political agenda through violence, murder, hate. We'll be right back.
Man, you hear this bullshit they be talking? Every day, man, it's like these motherfuckers is just like professional liars, you know what I'm saying? It's wild. Listen, Bin Laden didn't blow up the projects. It was your nigga. Tell the truth, nigga.
Bush knocked down the tower.
Tell the truth, nigga.
Bush knocked down the tower.
Tell the truth, nigga. Bin Laden didn't blow up the projects. It was your nigga. Tell the truth, nigga.
Bush knocked down the tower.
Tell the truth, nigga.
Bush knocked down the tower.
I pledge no allegiance, nigga. Fuck the president's speeches. I'm baptized by America and covered in leeches. The dirty water that bleaches your soul and your facial features. Drowning you in propaganda that they spit through the speakers. And if you speak about the evil that the government does, the Patriot Act attracts you to the type in your blood. They try to frame you and say you was trying to sell drugs and throw a federal indictment on niggas to show you love. This shit is run by fake Christians, fake politicians. Look at their mansions and look at the conditions you live in. All they talk about is terrorism on television. They tell you to listen, but they don't really tell you their mission. They funded Al-Qaeda, and now they blame the Muslim religion. Even though Bin Laden was a CIA tactician, they gave him billions of dollars, and they funded his purpose. Fahrenheit 9/11, that's just scratching the surface.
Bin Laden didn't blow up the projects. It was your nigga. Tell the truth, nigga.
Bush knocked down the tower.
Tell the truth, nigga.
Bush knocked down the tower.
Tell the truth, nigga. Bin Laden didn't blow up the projects. It was your nigga. Tell the truth, nigga.
Bush knocked down the tower.
Tell the truth, nigga.
Bush knocked down the tower.
They say the rebels in Iraq still fight to Saddam, but that's bullshit. I show you why it's totally wrong. 'Cause if another country invaded the hood tonight. It'll be warfare through Harlem and Washington Heights. I wouldn't be fighting for Bush or white America's dream. I'd be fighting for my people, survival and self-esteem. I wouldn't fight for racist churches from the south, my nigga. I'd be fighting to keep the occupation out, my nigga. You ever clock someone who talks shit for looking too wrong? Imagine if they shot at you and was raping your moms. And of course Saddam Hussein had chemical weapons. We sold them that shit after Ronald Reagan's election. Mercenary contractors fighting a new era. Corporate military banking off the war on terror. They controlling the ghetto with the fear of attack. Trying to distract the fact that they engineering the crack. So I'm strapped like Lee Malvo holding a sniper rifle. These bullets will touch your kids. And I don't mean like Michael. Your body is sent to the morgue, stripped down and recycled. I fire on house niggas that support you and like you. Because innocent people get murdered in the struggle daily. And poor people never get shit and struggle daily. This ain't no alien conspiracy theory. This shit is real. Putting on a dollar underneath the Masonic seal.
Now I don't rap for dead presidents. I'd rather see the president dead. Never been said, but I set precedents. Bin Laden blow up the project. It was your nigga. Tell the truth, nigga.
Bush knocked down the tower.
Tell the truth, nigga.
Bush knocked down the tower.
Tell the truth, nigga. Bin Laden blow up the project. It was your nigga. Tell the truth, nigga.
And welcome back to the Jim Dunzo Show, featuring a chicken so good they ought to be yours. It is still September 11th, 2012, as we begin the broadcast day here on Freedomizer Radio. Before the break, we were, of course, remembering the anniversary of September 11th and the false flag attacks there. And I want to continue with the discussion of how this operation operates. And I'm going to do that by describing why I think Rudolph Giuliani was high up in command in New York, and I believe gave the command to demolish those towers. If he didn't give the command, he was standing in the room when it was given. That's how high up he was. Let me start with his pedigree. Just his pedigree, his connection to the Bush crime syndicate. Because when you say secret government, you need to recognize that it's only officially secret. Everyone in power knows it exists and knows who its leaders are, so they know who to bow to. And way back in the 60s, that was run by the Harriman Bush Morgan cabal. And specifically, the CIA was run by Harriman, which was Prescott Bush's biggest business partner. They needed to take out JFK. George Herbert Walker Bush, and we don't have time to go into it on this show, but know it as a fact. George Herbert Walker Bush was the point man on the assassination attempt. Successful assassination attempt of JFK. All of the people that are known to be, from E. Howard Hunt to Nixon to R. Lyer Specter, all the people involved in the cover, Ford, Warren, they all go back, and all the assassins go back to Zapata Oil, Zapata Holdings, Miami, Dallas, George Herbert Walker Bush. He was the point man on that operation. Later on, 15 years later, he was rewarded after several losing campaigns for Senate and such. With the vice president. He lost the presidential nomination to Ronald Reagan, but he was told, Ronald Reagan was told, that if he did not, and this is in his autobiography, if he did not accept George Herbert Walker Bush as the nominee, they would steal the convention from him like they just did Ron Paul. And so he took George Herbert Walker Bush as his vice president, but George Herbert Walker Bush was not happy with Reagan's belief in trying to stabilize the money supply. That's how he framed the argument. He was arguing with the Federal Reserve that they not make any more money until the economy has time and the tax cuts have time to help the economy recover. Well, not printing more money was a problem for the Federal Reserve. And eventually, George Herbert Walker Bush decided to remove Ronald Reagan from office. And we've covered this on the show before, too. Again, we don't have time to go in detail on it. But the day, the exact day that Reagan was killed was the first day in office for Rudolph Giuliani. He was, his schedule included on that day, having breakfast and shaking hands with the president, photo, so he could use the president and his heroic solving of the crime. He could use that photo op for the rest of his political career. It was pre-planned at that moment for that photo to be similar to the photo that Bill Clinton uses with JFK. It was going to be, every time you saw Giuliani, there'd be a reference back to meeting Reagan the fateful day he died, and how he was happy to play some small part in bringing his killer to justice. Well, the only thing Rudolph Giuliani did was get the patsy out of local custody. Now, that's the same playbook. If we had time to go into it, we could. They used in Dallas. Get the locals out of the investigation. And Giuliani's job, the only thing he did on that assassination, was get Hinckley into federal custody as quickly as possible. Because if you watch the video, of Hinckley shooting into the crowd, supposedly where he shoots Reagan, John Hinckley never shot Ronald Reagan. John Hinckley did shoot James Brady. Shot him in the head. He's the husband of Sarah Brady of Brady Inc. Was the press secretary at the time for Reagan. Reagan was being pushed into the car by Gary Parr, a Secret Service agent from the secret government. And he recognized that Hinckley had not done his job. Hinckley had not shot the president, even though Parr had been several steps back, giving him a good opportunity for this psychopath to make the shot. He didn't. And so as the Secret Service agent pushed Reagan into the car, a pochette was used, a little plastic washer, fired to Reagan's side, stopping just short of his aorta. They drove around for 20 minutes before they got to the hospital. Then when they got there, they couldn't find a bullet until a nurse got a call from a Green Beret named Bo Greitz with security clearance and told them they were not looking for a bullet. They were looking for this clear plastic washer, and he told them where to look for it because he had used it before. If you look to this day on the x-ray, you will find a thin little wound from the outside in, supposedly a .22 caliber bullet, although it's not 0.22 of an inch thick. Because officially, now this doesn't make, this doesn't comport with any of the video evidence, but this is their theory as why it's not this plastic pochette. The .22 bullet officially bounced off the car door. Now, there was no ricochet on the video. There's no sign of steel plate being hit. There's, the gun's not aimed at that direction when it's fired. But nonetheless, the official theory is that the bullet somehow did some kind of full bowl turn and careened off the inside of the door, flashed itself out, and then entered the president. not tumbling after flattening itself out, but traveling perfectly level. Giuliani's job, Giuliani was trusted and appointed that day to be the new attorney general of something in charge of this area. He was put there at that time to make sure that none of that evidence ever got prosecuted, that the real killers weren't traced to people in a position to fire that suspect, like the Secret Service agent, like the guy who would become president, who had already killed a president. Now, you follow that up 20 years. George Herbert Walker Bush is no longer the president. He was vice president. Then his protege Clinton became president. Then his son again became president. Then Clinton's protege Obama became president. And the plan is now to have the race between a Bush and Jeb or a Clinton and Hillary in 2016 after 4 more years of Barack Hussein Obama Damon Bassa. But by then, Rudolph Giuliani was mayor of New York, which is one of the reasons they could use New York. They had their people, like another Rahm Emanuel. All those of you who hate Rahm Emanuel for his position in the Obama administration, you should. You should recognize that the people in the Republican administration have the same kind of character attached to them. Rahm Emanuel in Chicago, same thing as Rudolph Giuliani in New York. It's no coincidence that on 777 in London, Rudolph Giuliani just happened to be in the command center while they were engaging in drills of buses being hijacked, while one of the scenarios went live. And it was used as a false flag attack on people of London to get their support for the war with terror. There's a very few number of people who are entrusted with these responsibilities. And you can see their fingerprints again and again and again and again. At the same time they're carrying out these attacks, they are profiting tune of billions of dollars on your enslavement. They are advancing their political agenda, which benefits their personal financial position in order to enact tyranny against you. So that's why I believe, because of all of those other factors and the fact that he was the mayor of New York and should have been in that emergency command center, that he was in fact in that emergency command center in Building 7, which was not hit by a plane, but which collapsed despite all of its extra fortifications, on its own footprint at the rate of gravity, because there were fires where CIA were burning documents. Also on September 11th, we had officially a plane crash into the Pentagon. Now on September the 10th, and Cynthia McKinney, whatever else you think of her, is a hero for her questioning of Rumsfeld on this matter, which probably cost her her seat in Congress. But I don't think she cares about that. She cares more about this country. She asked about, on the 10th of September, Rumsfeld came out and made an announcement. They had lost, misplaced more than $1 trillion, more than 1 $1 trillion of your taxpayer money was lost in the Pentagon. They couldn't find it. But it just so happens that the very room where all the records were kept about that missing trillions of dollars, it wasn't Building 7 with the other records of the FTC. It was in part of the Pentagon that had just been refurbished. And in that area that had just been refurbished, the early video, the early picture, all the surrounding video from the video surveillance cameras of all the businesses within miles were immediately seized by the federal government. But on that, on the initial pictures we have, there's a big circular hole in the side of the Pentagon, one, which they want you to believe is the fuselage, the aluminum fuselage. But there's no holes where the multi-ton titanium engine traveling as fast as aluminum cone made any impact whatsoever with the Pentagon. They want you to believe in their theory that the plane hit and then the wings folded up, all of them, the ones back and the ones on the side, folded up and fit neatly into this hole like a sparrow climbing through a birdhouse. Just folded itself up and went through there. I want to tell you the plane did all that damage and flew that close to the ground for that long. Didn't leave any, and crashed into the ground, even, I think they, but didn't leave any debris behind. The pilot on that plane happened while he was part of the secret government. Happened to run a drill of in the Pentagon. He stood in the Pentagon and ran a drill of an airliner being flown into the Pentagon. He was the pilot of that plane, the one with military experience, who was overtaken by an Arab with, by a Muslim with razor blades, who was unable to fight off with three other people in the cockpit, was unable to fight off that attacker or type in the hijack code or do any number of things that a military trained man, you would like to think at least any American fighting man would have the ability to accomplish. None of that happened. Coincidentally, he ran a drill of a plane flying to the Pentagon while he was officially with the military before retiring to his CIA NSA cover job as an airline pilot. The people are key positions all throughout the operation. They don't. That's how they can control the whole thing. You say, how can they get away with it? That's how. The people in the media, they're part of the operation. That I think, is the biggest thing. Those people who won't believe what all of the evidence tells them, they won't believe it because the media won't admit it. Well, the old media won't admit it. Everybody on the new media takes it for granted. Everybody on the old media won't admit it. And they won't admit it because the CIA director was correct when he said that they owned everyone of any significance in the establishment media. It's a tool. The BBC anchors are a tool of the British government. That's why they announced the collapse of 7 before it happened. It was their thumbs up, their go-ahead, their we're getting in behind this plan with both feet, because here you have us on tape with the building in the background, 7 has collapsed. We are now behind the British government, and the British media are now behind your cover story, America. Here you have our support. We're not going to wait to come back and say we did it and try to have some kind of regime change. We're with you. You have Britain's support. On that same day, you saw Pakistan come in and support. Where the ISI is sent, who funded the operation with CIA money. Funded the hijackers, at least, with CIA money, the patsies. And we're still engaged, sworn on their feet. Terrorists that never attacked us. And we're told to ignore those terrorists who did attack us. Well, folks, it's been 11 years. It's time to focus winning this war on terror. That means getting, prosecuting. It even means killing those people responsible for murdering 2,000 Americans. Take your freedom, to take my freedom, to take the freedom of millions of foreign people, and to conquer planet's resources and put them all into a new world order, one world government. That's what this operation was intended to do by those who carried it out. It's our job. It's been 11 years. It's our job to bring those folks to justice. Join me tonight at on the Strip at New York, New York. I'll be out there around 5 o'clock. Right there outside the Statue of Liberty, you'll find a bunch of Las Vegas We Are Change members. Come on out and help commemorate the anniversary of this false flag attack. And then join us tomorrow here on the Jim Dungeon Show, featuring opinions so good they ought to be. As we begin the broadcast day here on Freedom Eyes Radio.
Too many people in America fear their government, and the government is being run by too many powerful agencies like the IRS and others. I think it's time the people take the country back through their representative government.
We'll wake up late.
they be talking. Every day, man, it's like these motherfuckers is just like professional liars, you know what I'm saying? It's wild. Listen, Bin Laden didn't blow up the projects. It was you, nigga. Tell the truth, nigga.
Bush knocked down the tower.
Tell the truth, nigga.
Bush knocked down the tower.
Tell the truth, nigga. Bin Laden didn't blow up the projects. It was you, nigga. Tell the truth, nigga.
Bush knocked down the tower.
Tell the truth, nigga.
Bush knocked down the tower.
I pledge no allegiance, nigga. Fuck the president's speeches. I'm baptized by America and covered in leeches. The dirty water that bleaches your soul and your facial features. Drowning you in propaganda that they spit through the speakers. And if you speak about the evil that the government does, the Patriot Act to track you to the type in your blood. They try to frame you and say you was trying to sell drugs. You throw a federal indictment on niggas to show you love. This shit is run by fake Christians, fake politicians. Look at their mansions and look at the conditions you live in. All they talk about is terrorism on television. They tell you to listen, but they don't really tell you their mission. They funded Al-Qaeda, and now they blame the Muslim religion. Even though Bin Laden was a CIA tactician, they gave him billions of dollars, and they funded his purpose. Fahrenheit 9/11, that's just scratching the surface.
Bin Laden didn't blow up the projects. It was you, nigga. Tell the truth, nigga.
Bush knocked down the tower.
Tell the truth, nigga.
Bush knocked down the tower.
Tell the truth, nigga. Bin Laden didn't blow up the projects. It was you, nigga. Tell the truth, nigga.
Bush knocked down the tower.
Tell the truth, nigga.
Bush knocked down the tower.
They say the rebels in Iraq still fight for Saddam, but that's bullshit. I'll show you why it's totally wrong. Cause if another country invaded the hood tonight, it'd be warfare through Harlem and Washington Heights. I wouldn't be fighting for Bush or white America's dream. I'd be fighting for my people's survival and self-esteem. I wouldn't fight for racist churches from the south, my nigga. I'd be fighting to keep the occupation out, my nigga. You ever clock someone who broke shit for looking you wrong? Imagine if they shot at you and was raping your mom. And of course Saddam Hussein had chemical weapons. We sold them that shit after Ronald Reagan's election. Mercenary contractors fighting a new era. Corporate military banking off the war on terror. They controlling the ghetto with the fear of attack. Trying to distract the fact that they engineering the crack. So I'm strapped like Lee Malvo holding a sniper rifle. These bullets will touch your kids. And I don't mean like Michael. Your body is sent to the morgue, stripped down and recycled. I fire on house niggas that support you and like you. Cause innocent people get murdered in the struggle daily. And poor people never get shit and struggle daily. This ain't no alien conspiracy theory. This shit is real. Written on a dollar underneath the Masonic seal.
Now I don't rap for dead presidents. I'd rather see the president dead. It's never been said, but I set precedents.
Bin Laden didn't blow up the projects. It was you, nigga. Tell the truth, nigga.
Bush knocked down the tower.
Tell the truth, nigga.
Bush knocked down the tower.
Tell the truth, nigga. Bin Laden didn't blow up the projects. It was you, nigga. Tell the truth, nigga.
All right, welcome everyone to another edition of Ron's Media Matrix. I'm your host, Ron, and today is Patriots Day. And today, my special guest will be Paul Tepetti of PokerFace.com. But I thought it would be appropriate, I mean, you know, that the God is in the control of this universe, so I want to open up the show with a prayer, and I'm going to read from Hebrews 10:35-36. Cast not away, therefore, your confidence, which hath great recompense of reward, for you have need of patience, that after you have done the will of God, you might receive the promise. So, Heavenly Father, we come before you today in your holy throne, and we ask that all the people and that were victims of 9/11 and the terrorist attack on this day 11 years ago, that you'll bring healing to the friends and family, and that all the young men and women that are overseas who are fighting under the banner of the military industrial complex, make it that they wage a war of peace and not of slaughter and the taking of innocent lives and attacking sovereign nations as our government has directed that. We ask in your name that all the radio talk show hosts and all the people at Freedomizer provide the best radio broadcast that they can and the most accurate information. We come before you this day. Amen. Amen. So anyway, folks, I just wanted to get that out. I thought that was an appropriate thing to do. That as we watch the televisions and MSNBC, all they're doing is replaying everything that they was broadcast that day, and it's kind of sad, but we must look forward to a brighter future. So anyway, I'm going to get Paul on the line with us here. We're going to be talking to Paul DePetty of Poker Face. We're going to be playing a couple of songs from his latest CD release, and he's going to tell us about some of the things that he's done in his with his creative music as an artist and as an independently labeled artist. He's not part of the mainstream media. So we're going to bring Paul online here, and let me get organized. I'm a little bit shaky today. I don't know. At the conference call. So anyway, I didn't really realize it till today that we had this. Hey, Paul.
Hey, Rob. What's going on?
Hey, welcome to the show. Yeah, I'm glad you came by, stop and talk with us. I understand it's your birthday, and we wish you a happy birthday out there.
Thanks, brother. It's interesting. It's interesting as always.
Yes, yes, it is. Yes, and anyway, yesterday I went, and I got a couple of songs from your latest CD, and we're going to play those during the course of the show.
Yep.
And anyway, I've been kind of reading up on. I read up on some of the lyrics there of the couple of songs I want to play. Especially Freedom on the Run, and that's a very good song. But tell us about your collaboration with Mark Farner of Grand Funk Railroad. I saw that. So tell us what's going on there.
This has been an ongoing thing since 2005. Excuse me. Well, that was a lot of sleepy days. 2005, a mutual friend by the name of Mark, another Mark, Paul, he wanted to introduce both Mark Farner, the Great American Patriot, with Poker Face, the Young Patriot Protest rock band. So he threw a concert in Upper Peninsula, Michigan, August of 2005. So we got to open up with Mark at a very cool, intimate concert type of event. And got to speak with Mark a little bit at the end. But basically, it was like the beginning of getting to know him. 2006, we got attacked by the ADL Agicog Group, OPP, when we were supposed to play for the New Jersey State Libertarian Convention. In 2006, February, we had played the same convention the year before, but I guess the ADL and the SPLC were starting to take notice that we weren't going away and we were becoming more popular and people were reading our politically incorrect forum board. So they had to make an issue out of it and try to dirty us up by calling us the Pavlovian program dog names of "you're an anti-Semite, you're a hater, you're white Minuteclanner, you're white supremacist, you're not." I'm like, really? I just thought I was Paul, the American who's supporting this country against domestic enemies, foreign and domestic. Right now, being the domestic ones that are really in our face. So 2006, Mark Farner was reading the American Free Press, and he saw the ordeal that we're going through, so he called me in March and said, "Brother Paul, we need to get together someday and do some writing of some patriot rock and get on some of these issues." And that was 2006. So for the next 3 years, we were both very busy just, doing what we do. And then January of 2009, Mark and his beautiful wife, Lisa, invited me out to come out for a week and spend it in a very cold, Michigan winter right off the lakes. It snowed 5 inches of new snow every day. It was 90 degrees every day. And we proceeded to write a bunch of different songs. And the very first one that we started working on that very first night was called "Gonna Take You Out." It started as a song where it was about the bankers and our rage against the bankers. So, the first lyrics that came out of it were, "I'm gonna smash your ugly face in and kick the shit right out of you. I'm tired of all of your evil drama and all the darkness that you do." So anyway, when Mark came out with the beta version of it earlier this year and he sent it to me, he turned it into a chick song. It's actually kind of hooky, and it works, and he got a new record contract out of it. He started recording in Boston this past July, and the song that we wrote is the first single coming off of it, and we're looking very forward to it doing well and doing well for Mark, and hopefully Mark will want to do some more writing with us.
cool. You know, Grand Funk Railroad, they go back a long ways.
Oh, dude, that's some great songs, man. Like, Son, Don't Let Them Pick Your Guns, that was produced with Zappa.
Oh, wow. Yeah, so you got a really cool connection there. But, you know, as being as an independent artist and refusing to bow down to the mainstream record label, you kind of pay a price for that, do you not?
Oh, yeah. I mean, we had to make that choice in 1999, 2000, when six different labels came out to see us play in New York. And they said they loved the music, loved the stage, you know, stage show, the live act. But we had to tone down that politically incorrect message. And they're like, ain't going to happen. There's a door. Don't let the door hit your ass on the way out while you're about to come out.
So I said you guys do a lot of local stuff. I was looking at PokerFace.com, and you guys had an acoustical get-together. Up there in Pennsylvania?
Well, yeah, we throw the annual Friend of Blues event where we bring the best of the truth talkers in America that can call out all the criminals, not just the ones that are politically correct. And that's Freedom Blues. So what we've been doing every month now is once a month we're getting together for an acoustic version of it to keep the franchise name going and keep people just, you know, going back to the place where we have the event so that people get familiar with it. And I don't know, it turned out to be a pretty cool evening. We get to camp out and hang out till late around the fire, listen to some good music, listen to some good people speaking the truth. So hopefully this idea spreads everywhere, man.
Well, you know, actually, I was listening to another host earlier, and they were talking about, well, one of our callers was talking about, you know, you have to start locally, and even though you're not a politician in that sense, but when you do your music, you have local events. You don't go on a big MTV circuit, and there's a lot of, you know, just a lot of hype and stuff. So would you say that's kind of your direction creatively as a musician to change things locally?
Of course. I mean, it all starts locally.
Yeah.
Well, first it starts with you, and then it starts with your family, and then it starts with your community, and then it starts with your state, and then your nation, and then the world. But you got to start where you can be most effective the most. It's cool that the band has a more of a national, international platform to speak for now because of the length that we've been doing this and the respect that we have for just being consistent in our words and our actions. If your words and actions don't equal each other, then nobody's going to believe you. And I'm only as good as my last truth. So if I start lying to you, what good does that do to all the truths that I told you for so long? So, you know, we just stay where it keeps our conscience clean because we're doing what we feel is the best under the information that we have at the present time. And if we learn something else and it changes what we've known, then we come forth with it. We don't have a problem saying, like, we were wrong on something. But, you know, generally, there's been very little, if any, that we've been wrong on that. We've been calling it all out. And we haven't had to go back a step or two. We just keep forward, going forward, and everybody else is starting to catch up with us. But because we're so far out there out front, we've been taking the flag from the anti-American rights-hating groups of the ADL, some probably Lawson or AIPAC, and all these other pro-Zionist organizations that hate America and hate you.
Yeah, that's true, Paul. I mean, I see that, you know, I was looking at your albums, and you guys spend a lot of time refining the things you say and write and what you put into your music. And so when you do come out with a CD or release of songs, everything is very polished, and it goes down deep. Because I was looking at some of these lyrics for the Freedom on the Run. And that is a very good song. That's a really cool song. And I liked a lot of the songs on the album. It's just that I don't know if I'll have time to, but I want to feature two of them. And so if you'd like to, I'm going to go ahead and we're going to play Freedom on the Run for the audience.
Love it.
All right, let's see. Let me go to my switchboard here. And this is from the Peace and War CD, folks. Paul Tepeda, Poker Face, is here with us today, and we're going to be talking about some of his music and some of the things that he's doing locally in his community to get the word out. And as we all know, this is Patriots Day. And it's a sad day, but I think the people that we have overseas should be instruments of peace rather than to continue to run this fake war on terrorism. And so let me get it here. Wait a moment. Okay, folks, we're going to listen to this is from the Peace of War CD from Poker Face, Freedom on the Run. And when we come back, Paul's going to tell us a little bit about the song. So here we go.
What's going on? Freedom on the Run. What's going on?
latest CD, Peace or War. And, you know, I was reading the lyrics to that, and everything's very compact, and it's got a very direct message, you know. I mean, are you going to stand up and fight? And this, you know, it's Obama fascist thing that's going on. It's that song came together really well, Paul. It was a really good lesson, man.
Thanks, brother. Actually, that song was supposed to come out on our Thursday, Sex, Size, and Politics, but when the time came to putting it out, this wasn't where we needed it to be.
Yeah, I mean, you make a lot of references there. People dead and gone, I guess that's in reference to the 9/11. And
9/11 or Ruby Ridge with Randy Weaver's wife, and son getting whacked by the feds, to the Branch Davidians getting Holocausted to death, to Gordon Call getting murdered and then chopped up into six pieces. I mean, these guys are sick apps, man.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. And, you know, the reference to jack boots and billy clubs are gay fashion. It's that we see a lot, so much of this. You know, they continue to restrict our freedoms. We need to be monitored, databased, put into categories. And that's one of the big issues I have with the way this direction our government's going, that we have these protected groups. And at the same time, they talk about transparency, but they want to further winnow down and give you a label and you know, just this and that. And that keeps people fighting.
Well, that's the thing, is dividing us from the smallness of differences of from 0 to 20% when there's 80% that we all have in common, that we need to come together on the 80% and set aside that hardcore differences until we vanquish the syndicate, the Jewish syndicate, that, you know, the global syndicate that's killing this world off, not just America. But if America falls, the rest of the world will fall into the deepest, darkest, dark ages this world has ever known. And I and my bandmates and our friends and family are all trying to prevent that. You know, we're awake and aware, and we know who's doing it to us. We just got to get back a government that's actually going to do something about the criminals instead of being in bed with the criminals.
Yes, that's very true. And the last two conventions, every convention gets more dramatic, and it's all just hot air. All you have to do is watch 10 minutes on any of the mainstream television. It's all windbag. It's all, you know, they're faking this thing that they really have a connection with you, and they know the things that they need to do for you and all that. But when they get in the position, they all turn right around to the bankers and the major corporations and say, what do you want us to do? It's totally insane.
We have a new disc coming out called Tyranny Befalls America, and I think half of the songs are the 12, I think six are dedicated to the scumbag bankers and, you know, the evil that they do.
Yeah, yeah. That's so I was looking, and I noticed that you write some articles for the American Free Press, am I correct?
Yeah, I've done some in the past. Actually, coming out. I'm also doing some audiobooks for American Free Press. So we have the studio, and I get to read all my favorite authors. I get a copy of each of the books, and it's a beautiful marriage between, you know, AFP and Poker Face doing some work together in Portland. And I might have the privilege to read Eustace Mullen's work. We're working on that right now, and he's one of my mentors.
Oh wow, yeah, that's really, really cool. You guys have been together for like 20 years. I mean, that's so you're all very, very everybody's on the same page.
Yeah, I got probably the coolest band in the world, man. I got brothers that know what's going on, on the band, writing lyrics and putting out this, that, you know, they're basically little truth bombs. You know, if a listener or fan buys one of our stuff and, you know, gets the whole package and we pull out the insert and they're looking at the lyrics, or they're looking at our political utterances and our treaties and our rants, then they're going to come away from a little more educated. And we give them lots of sources to check us out, you know, prove us wrong. But in the end, if you're trying to prove us wrong, you're going to get educated. And in the end, you're going to be along the lines of thinking as us. Unless you really are the devil, then you're going to hate us as much as he hates us.
Yeah, that's very true. Now, I had an interesting question. You know, when I saw you recently, I had the opportunity to write with Mark Farner of Grand Funk Railroad. Now, these guys will probably have some of the bigger labels. So, I mean, do these bigger label guys kind of sneer at you when they see you collaborating with some of the people they have on the contract? How does that work?
Well, you know what, dude? Everybody's an individual, man, and everybody's got their own, you know, soul and conscience to deal with. Brother Mark's always been a patriot.
Mm-hmm.
What happened with him was 76 was the last major label disc that he came out with, and he did that one with Frank Zappa. And the reason why he basically got dropped from his label is because they were popular, and Mark was starting to speak out against some of the things that the New World Order Society was trying to shove down our throats, and one is, like, confiscation of our guns. So he wrote this song called Son, Don't Let Them Take Your Guns. In fact, that was the very first song that Zappa brought up because of the lyrics that were in it. And he's like, you know, what's your fascination with guns? Guns, 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 guns. And, you know, Mark goes to Frank, like, Frank, have you ever even shot a gun? And Frank said, no. I mean, Frank had been brought up, you know, in the lefty community, all guns are bad. And, you know, like, well, my hammer can bash you in the head, and are we going to outlaw hammers? I can run you over with my car, and, you know, and my all cars are going to get, you know, taken away. I mean, there's more car deaths, accidental deaths by cars than even close anywhere, you know, with guns. So Mark took Frank Zappa out back of the studio, lined up a bunch of cans, gave him a .45, and the very first shot that Zappa, you know, took, he hit the can bullseye. Dude, Zappa has been coach on guns ever since. He became a lifelong member of the NRA, which, you know, they're a weak organization. There's better, like, gun owners in America than Larry Pratt, but at least he went from being a total leftist to getting it and then becoming an active, you know, gun advocate. So, you know, we could turn any lefty into a gun lover. We just got to get them past the brainwashing and programming.
Yeah, it's really funny because I like Frank Zappa's work, and he was one of these guys that, you know, people saw the long hair and he's passed. But when I saw some of the interviews with Frank Zappa, and he says, "No, I don't do drugs. I don't drink. I don't need that. I'm just myself."
Man, he's a classic, man, and talented. And look, man, I'm not a fan of his music, but my guitar player can't get enough of his music. Okay.
Yeah.
But
I
love Frank for the individual that he was. When he spoke up at the PMRC hearings with Gore's wife, Tipper Gore, trying to, you know, silence and basically say, well, you know, I can't say what I want to sing on my albums. And that was actually very threatening to the First Amendment rights of artists. And she needed to go, her and her idiot husband. And, you know, Frank was great on the stand. He basically spanked her for the idiot that she was.
Yeah, that's true. Well, Paul, we got to go to a commercial break here and get a word in from our sponsors. You going to hang out with us for a little bit here?
Yeah, I got a little bit more time, man.
Okay. All right, folks, so we're talking to Paul DePetty of PokerFace.com, and we'll put his website in the chat room. I've been got off on a different tangent here, but if you guys want to check out some of his music, the latest CD is Peace of War, and we'll put that in the chat room for you. Can't type today. Anyway, yeah, be sure to check that out. In the meantime, we're going to hear from our sponsors here. And let me get the switchboard. I'm a little bit slower this morning. Looks like we've got a lot of new hosts here in the last couple of weeks. And Freedomizer is constantly on the march to get the message out to you guys. And so we'll be right back at this work from Liberty Stickers.
You know the Constitution like the back of your hand. You've read books, listened to podcasts, attended lectures, surfed websites, and watched videos. You've made liberty your life's goal, but something seems to be missing. Stickers from LibertyStickers.com. Exercise your freedom of speech with the world's most dangerous bumper stickers. That's LibertyStickers.com. But wait. There's more. You can buy Liberty stickers wholesale. Get them for 99 cents each when you put 100 or more in your shopping cart in any combination. Sell them or give them away. They're great for gun shows, flea markets, fairs, outreach, and more. Earn extra money, promote freedom, and spread the word. Need custom stickers, labels, or decals for your organization or business? Liberty Stickers makes them. Go to LibertyStickers.com to order or call 877-873-9626. LibertyStickers.com, the world's most dangerous stickers.
There's a saying that the only thing certain in life is death and taxes. Well, they should include hard drive failure as well. You can ensure your data is safe by using Maximum Archive's online backup solution. By securely backing up the Maximum Archive servers, your data is protected from fire, theft, or simple hard disk failure. Don't let your data go unprotected. Sign up for Maximum Archive today. Use partner code Freedomizer at checkout time and help fund the Freedomizer Radio Network. That's MaximumArchive.com.
Greetings, this is Blake the Eccentric, and I want to invite you to check out my new show on Freedomizer Radio, The Eccentric Perspective. It's sort of a red pill, blue pill, going down the rabbit hole kind of show, featuring outside-the-box politics, philosophy, and gonzo journalism. But be warned, with knowledge comes responsibility, and you might not see the world the same way again. As I will attempt to open your mind, speak to your common sense, and challenge your critical thinking skills. So please join me Monday, Wednesday, and Thursday from noon to 1:30 Pacific Time. Once again, that's Eccentric Perspective, only on Freedomizer Radio.
Hey. Hey folks, Valerie Sergeant Martin here, rebel agitator, Republican renegade, and host of the Valerie Sergeant Martin Show. Twice weekly, I bring you guests who represent the best and brightest of the liberty movement, including best-selling authors, candidates, and legislators, and everyday activists, all patriots actively involved in taking back control of our government, putting power in the hands of the people where it belongs. We also talk economics, finance, international markets, and monetary policy. Anything and everything to do with free markets and capitalism. So friend me on Facebook, follow me on Twitter, and join me Sundays 4 to 6 p.m. Eastern and Thursdays 8 to 9 p.m. Eastern for the Valerie Sergeant Martin Show. And remember, extremism in defense of liberty is no vice.
You are listening to Freedomizer Radio, where freedomizers freedomize freedom.
All right, folks, we're back here with Ron's Media Matrix. And our special guest today is Paul DePetti of PokerFace.com. And, Paul, I know I probably asked you about this, but I saw you had something recent posted on your site about the Huda Tree. And this is one of those groups, they considered, gun owners or whatever, or radicals. But tell me something about that. Did they find out? I guess they said they were following your music.
Well, we did a gig with them this past weekend, the pig roast for the Huttery that had gotten out of prison. All charges were dismissed against them, except for the three gun charges against Dave Stone, his son, and somebody else. But those charges were dismissed as well because of time served. And basically, we went out there to meet these people because, the Jewish meeting had made it that they were like these horrible people and that they were going to blow up penal possessions of cops. And, when you find out that the person was talking bombs and trying to teach them how to do bombs was the FBI informant known as New Jersey Steve. And the guy that was the ADL plant that went in to begin with was Dan Murray. Okay, so it was the Jews going in there to try to undermine these people's lives because they weren't politically correct. Because they might be armed and they might be, wanting to protect themselves from a tyrannical government. Tyrannical government basically being a Jewish Bolshevik government. They're going to do to the United States what they did to Russia. All the wrong Jews and are in all the right police state conditions basically Bolshevize us and mass murder us to the tune of 60 to 100 million Americans. That's what I'm trying to prevent. And if I have to call them out, then I will. And if I get called dirty names because I talk the truth, then hey, so be it. Today's anti-Semitism is one who the Jews hate, not one who hates the Jews. So get that programming unprogrammed to become American again.
Yeah, that's true. It's this group has it's not about violence, but they from what I gather, it's just about protecting their Second Amendment rights.
And we got the Tom Pytek and Michael Meeks and Wendy Lineweaver and a few others. And dude, they're just like you and I, man. They just want to be left alone. And if they want to get together and practice and train and stuff like that, well, hey, in America, you're still allowed to do that. You're always allowed to do that. And, anybody who's in the militia from the age of 16 to 45 or 65, really. And, we have enemies, domestic and foreign. And we need to be, getting ready for when they pull the plug, when they stop issuing the checks. That's the day of the day when they stop sending the pension checks out, the welfare checks out, the pension, all the different checks that come to you. When that happens, the cities will burn because the people will not know what to do. They will not know where to go for food. Prices are going to skyrocket. So don't be in the city. Get out of the city. Come out of battle. I've been telling this to people for 20-plus years, I practice what I preach, and so do my bandmates, and we're gearing up for what's coming. Who knows when it's going to come, but it's coming soon, man. The value of the dollar is going down, down, down. Price of gas is going up, up, up. And, our way of life is getting changed by the minute.
Yeah, that's true. It's I noticed that, the mainstream media, they've become so dramatized this election that now when they come on air, especially Fox News, only, 64 days and counting till the election, And they go straight to, they don't really do news, but they pull on people's minds, and they come out, well, the market's going back up. It looks like we're almost out of the recession or the depression. And then, we have this from Romney. He doesn't support Obamacare. He does support it. and Obama is signing a medical student's gown. You know, it says "Go Obamacare." It's all propaganda. And one of the things is that they don't even talk about the European Central Bank, how the things they're doing to try to prop up their own economy in Europe, it's simply not working. But they don't report on that. And the thing is, our market is tied directly to the European market. They did that a couple of years ago, right after 2008. And
well, they actually had done it since Bretton Woods after World War II. And, it's just coming unleashed now. They've done everything, every kind of Ponzi scheme they possibly could to keep it running. But they've done it long enough so that they could consolidate all the wealth and power and line up who are the Shabbat glories doing the work for them. And then they'll murder them too, man, because they always murder those that could turn traitors against their own people. So, hey, man, I'm sounding the alarm. You know, people like Alan Sabrowski, an American patriotic Jew, that's sounding the alarm that Israel and the Mossad did it. And it's going to be blowback against Israel once the Americans wake up and find out that Israel did do 9/11. And, you know, he fears that – he doesn't fear it, but he accepts that even if he has to die because Americans are going – they won't know good Jew for bad Jew by that point. So I tell Jews right now, it's like, wake up, man. The leaders are selling you out just like they did in World War II. They put the non-Zionist Jews in the camps, the war camps. They're doing it to you now that, you know, people are going to blow back at them. And there's going to be a lot of ugliness coming. So either expose your scumbag leaders now or reap what you do so.
Yeah, that's you know, I was thinking, I had an article I was looking at about the European banks, and they mentioned a single currency, but I don't know, maybe if the European currency fails, that will put into position. So okay, well, we don't need regional currencies, we need a global currency. Yeah, and that's where, yeah,
EQ has been put on the table, you know, many, many years ago, and that is the world currency. You know, they tried to do the euro, and now they wanted to do the American version, the Nero, and I'm sure the Asians will have their Asian version, but they just might skip all that and just go straight to the one world money system, man. It's almost there anyway, you know, with just debits and credits on the computer screen.
Yeah, as recently, since I was fired from my job back in April, it was just a... Anyway, what really just eat me up is I had to go before an administrative judge to win my right to draw my unemployment insurance. And the thing is that not only did I realize now that they're not mailing checks out. Now they're giving you a debit card, and what would really make you I can't believe it. But Bank of America is administrating the funds for the unemployment insurance, and I imagine they're doing it in other states. And so it's really messed up because Bank of America, back years ago, they were caught up in the laundering drug cartel money.
All the banks are caught up laundering drug cartel money. There isn't an international bank that isn't doing that.
It's really surprising me that not only were they propped up by our administration, our government, whatever you want to call it, but now they're reaping the rewards. All they're simply doing is that they're getting paid to administer poverty.
Right. We're no longer a middle-class society. We're rapidly becoming poor. And all you middle-class people, you're not middle-class anymore. Middle-class means you have money that's expendable money. When you're paying all your expendable money on gas just to get you and your family around, you're now poverty level, okay?
Yeah, and it's, you know, they're saying the gas is going back up, and so I don't know. It's a dog and pony show with, you know, the market's going up, the election's coming up. Oh, well, gasoline's coming up, but you might as well pay for it. But anyway, I didn't have time. I only got two of your songs up, but tell us a little bit about the song Grassland. I'd like to play that maybe at some other show. I didn't get up time last night. I had to do my news rundown. Let's talk a little bit about that song.
Well, Poker Face is about solutions, and at one time, the farmer used to be the economic vehicle engine for the local county, and basically they have impoverished the farmers by outlawing hemp since the 20s, when it could be the cash crop for America, so it could put money into the pockets of the farmers, so that they are, again, the economic center of each county, where we could be going for our food, our fuel, our cloth, our paper, the 50,000 different products that we could all be making locally. Again, back to the local issue. Everything starts local. We don't need international corporations providing me for my every basic need, from food to, you know, clothing. We could be getting it all locally and employing our neighbors, all being part of God's economic power, because that's how we made it, you know. And look, the battle is between the hydrocarbon oil death dealers versus the carbohydrate life farmers, okay? And they're outlawing life and pushing death, okay? Nothing good comes out of the oil conglomerates, the banking, oil, military, death industrial complex, all right? We need to go back to the local life givers, okay? Those that give life, that produce life so that the rest of us can be nourished and fulfilled with our life. We all have good middle-class lives. We got to beat down and kill them off the monopolists, who is monopolizing all the wealth for his selfish, greedy ass self, and we need to be in power of our own destiny instead of them basically pushing us into slave labor for the rest of our lives to the tune of 500 million of us after they genocided off the 6 billion. That's what Jews do. They genocide. Why? Because the filth books of the Talmud and Kabbalah allow for the supremacists, the racial supremacism, to make it that it's okay to kill off somebody else because it's for me. In the end, I get back everything that they have. That's a sick ideology. It's what killed off 100 million in Russia. It's what killed off 30 million in Ukraine. It's what killed off another 15 to 20 million in Eastern Europe. And another 100 million between the First and Second Bankers War. Okay, they are the biggest genociders on the planet. But yet, all we hear is the Holy Hulk Smith going on and on and on about the 97,000 that died in the camp. Dude, I'm sick of it. Okay? I'm sick of it being in every movie that we watch. I'm sick of it being in every TV show that they make an allusion to. All right? That's called programming, because when you lie something, you have to sell that lie. And they sell it in everything that we watch and hear. All right? Stop watching the TV. Turn your television sets off, man. Stop getting programmed.
Yeah, that's you know, this movie 2016. I haven't seen it yet, and I really don't go to the theaters that much anymore. But I've spoke with some other people, and they say that, well, for them to put that movie out, it must have gotten a clean bill of health from the major media. Yeah.
It doesn't mention anything. It doesn't go into depth about anything. Okay, it's a puff piece.
A puff piece, yeah. That's right. And that some people saying, oh, it really reveals, but it's the cotton candy of waking up. There's no content to it.
Right. I mean, because once you start scratching the surface and actually get into contact, into the context of the problems, then what happens is it dirties up both the Republicans and the Democrats, man, because they both suck the globalist PD.
So are you guys going to do an October? I noticed you guys, you're doing an annual Rocktoberfest. Is that coming up in your area?
We stopped doing Rocktoberfest in the 90s. A lot of times it's because once you get past September, it rains a lot. And at the last two or three that we threw, it started raining like towards the end, and it's just a pain in the ass trying to break down, clean up in the dark and the rain and the mud. we do non-stick machine gun shoot down in Kentucky, and that's machinegunshoot.com. It's going to be the 13th, 14th, and 15th of October. Come down and hang out with a bunch of other God-loving, gun-loving patriots that blow up things like cars, boats, buses. I haven't seen an airplane down there yet, but I'm sure they'll pull one in there. But, they blow up things with guns that are still in Americans' hands. It's awesome display of firepower still in the hands of Americans. And we have the largest ex-cashiered or retired military base out there. So it's like, do you guys really think in all your hubris that you're going to conquer us? You can't even conquer a shitty little country like Iraq, man, okay? And we have 100 million pissed-off gun owners here. And here in Pennsylvania, we are the state with the most amount of long guns and people that know how to use them. So bring it on, man. The quicker it gets, you know, comes, the quicker it gets over with.
Yeah, that's true. And so you guys, have you been working on any new releases? Have you starting to pull together the outline for new album here in a couple of years?
No, the new one's almost done, man. We're trying to get it done so we can throw a gig December 21st on the supposedly the day that the world ends, man. We have a song called Wormwood. So it'd be cool to debut that song while the world's supposedly ending and we're just rocking it on stage. But the disc is called Journey Befalls America, 12 new tunes, half of them about the bankers. You know, we give our love. Our insert's going to be talking about the protocols of the learned elders of Zion and basically boiling it down to one sentence for each of the 24 points of how they're taking over the world. And yes, the Jews did create it. And the thing is that they don't call it a fraud. They call it a forgery. Because how dare somebody copied it and cut the original version of it? Because it is true. And on that same insert that we're going to come out with, we're going to have the protocols of solutions by the learned elders of Christ, which are going to be vaccinations to all the disease that the elders of Zion have been building to this planet.
Oh, wow. All right. So, you know, I have another song I want to pull up here, and I found last night when I was doing the rundown, I listened to a couple of those songs. But we're going to kind of play into another area here. And let me get my song up here. You wrote the song Area 51, and I thought that was an interesting song. So we're going to share that with our listeners here. And then we're going to come up with another topic here. Let me get my okay. We're going to start, folks. We're going to play another song from Paul Tepeti of Poker Face, their latest album, Area 51. And we're going to ask him a few questions about this song. And I thought it was really a cool song. So here we go. That's Area 51 from the Peace of War CD and by Poker Face.
I'm talking to you.
All right, folks, that was Area 51 from Poker Face's latest album, Peace or War. And as I say, we're going to segue into another topic here. But first, I want to kind of begin with just the idea when you buy independently created music, the route you go about is not that the same as when you walk into the mall and the perfume and the noise and the hype, and you get the pretty package with the plastic around it and all that. So when I bought the album last night, I had a little bit of trouble downloading it, and so I emailed the creator of the song, and he got me straightened out on that. So, Paul, when I was downloading the songs, I had to kind of jump through a few hoops there that all the titles of the songs were like the, you know, a pre-production type name, and everything was abbreviated. So I was going through them, and I was on the song list, and I figured out, well, this is this song, this is this song. So I named them all up so I could get them up on our server. But anyway, that A51, I go, what is it? What's the name of that song? So I weeded them down, and I finally got down and said, oh, that's the Area 51 song. And I read the lyrics. And I go, this is interesting. But, you know, it's one of the topics on this, on our radio shows here, is about the UFOs and the aliens. But the thing is, what I want to point out, Paul, is in the song, you talk about what you believe on your TV, about the deception. And I was thinking, do you think it's possible that our own government could set up a false flag alien UFO event to divert us from what's really going on so they can get us in line?
It's one of the plans that they talked about, but the whole UFO thing is there are no space buddies out there. There are interdimensional beings. It was written about in The Word where they came down and had sex with the daughters of Adam and created the Nephilim giant race. There's evidence of the giants all over the world. Many have been found anywhere from, like, you know, 12, 13, 14, 15 feet all the way up to, like, 25, 30 feet. They're very big. If you go to our forum board and you go into creation versus evolution down at the bottom, there's a picture of a four-foot imprint left in quartz rock, okay? So
wow.
If that was a full, imagine how big the giant had to be, you know, if that was a four-foot foot. Okay, I have a 12-inch foot, so that was a 48-inch foot. And so what we talked about in Area 51 is that these Nephilim are still around, and they're hanging out down in the lower levels of the underground bases where they made friends with the criminal government, man. And at some point in the future, they will be unleashed upon humankind, just like the days of Noah, so shall the end days be.
So it's kind of like that, unleashing the gates of hell will be open in the last days.
Like that. That's one way to look at it, sure.
But it's like you say, you mentioned, and the song's interesting, because you bring up that the point that says, do you only believe what you see on your TV?
Right.
And that's the whole idea is that you have to engage your own mind and look at various sources to find out what the truth is going on nowadays. That's what
right.
It amounts to.
The best thing that you can do right off the bat is turn off your TV set, because everything that comes out of it is a lie.
Yeah, that's we've got 500 channels.
And nothing at all.
Nothing is on. I had a... One time I came up with a word. I call it mediocrity as opposed to mediocrity.
Yeah, true.
And that's exactly what it is. It's really really a key point. But like I say, you know, that's really cool about the way you write your songs, that you get in there and you kind of compact everything down, but you always make the key point that you must be aware of what's going on and you must fight for your rights.
If you don't, then nobody will do it for you. You wind up with a sleeve and a FEMA can, huh?
Yeah, that's true. So,
ask the Russians how that worked out for them, man.
Huh?
Ask the Russians how that worked out for them.
Yeah, that's true. That's true.
Coming to an American near you.
Well, one of the things was that before the Bolshevik Revolution, they were talking about how they're going to take care of everybody.
Oh, they took care of them all right, man.
Yeah.
The thing about, you know, when Jews do come to power, they're some of the most vicious, vindictive people on earth. You should look into, like, what they did to the actual Ukrainians, starving them to death, or what they did to the blood fest, the orgy fest that they had when they started whacking people, man. Look, if I'm going to kill somebody, I put a bullet in their head. I'm not going to cut their head off, gouge their eyes out, pull their tongue out. I mean, that shit is sick. Okay?
Yeah.
And I don't want that to happen here. So, yeah, I'm screaming loudly. And I put it on the group that's doing it the most. If it's illegal aliens, I talk Mexicans and Hispanics. I don't talk about the Jews. Okay, but when it comes to media, government, school, you know, it all comes back to one group. All right?
Yeah, yeah, yeah. You know, I noticed you had a song in Spanish on that. What is it? Sobre Vivari? Am I pronouncing
it? It's a song, Survive, in Spanish. We try to put at least one of our songs translated into Spanish so my dad's side of the family can understand it.
Oh.
Wait. I'm a white supremacist, man, okay? I thought white supremacists hate the beaters, man.
Really. Well, that's really, cause it's really cool. That's really a very unique CD. And, folks, you're not going to find any better, you know, really good music. Something, songs have meaning. And as always, Paul is a really good rock artist, and his group have been together over 20 years. And you guys just really do a bang-up job when you put a CD together. So, Paul, we're going to go to our commercial break, and if you want to stick around with us, if you got some, you know.
No, but I got to cut our conversation now. I got to go pick up my girl at work and go with the day. Today's my birthday, so I'm just going to kick back and enjoy the rest of it. And I want to thank you for having me up and, you know, sharing with your listeners the music from the band. And, you know, keep doing what you're doing. But take the many member body Church of Freedom, all of us, to stay free.
Okay, Paul. So thank you so much for being on the show. And like I say, we may have you back here in the coming months. So thanks so much for being on. Being on with us, Paul.
All right, brother. God bless you.
All right, bye.
Bye-bye.
All right, folks, that was Paul Petty from Poker Face. He's one of my regular guests here, and he really makes some cool music, so I encourage everyone to get out there and visit PokerFace.com. And if you live in the area up there around Pennsylvania, Paul has some events, and you can maybe hook up with him and go to one of his shows. So anyway, we're going to go to a commercial break here, and I'm going to come back and we'll cover a few news articles with you guys. I've got a list of articles I want to talk about. So we'll be right back after these messages from our sponsors. And so stick around. And let's see what we got here to pay the bills here. All right. So we're going to hear word from Maximum Archive and a couple other things, and we'll be right back.
In today's economy, the ability to access data quickly can mean the difference between success and failure. Maximum Archive's MyDrive service lets you have access to your data from just about any device and pretty much anywhere. MyDrive makes sure that when it counts, you can get what you need, because failure is not an option. Sign up for MyDrive today at MaximumArchive.com. Use partner code Freedomizer at checkout and help fund the Freedomizer Radio Network. That's MaximumArchive.com.
Want to spread awareness to your neighbors, family, and friends about what is going on in our country today? It may be things you already know, like the large number of FEMA camps spread around this country to lock up citizens like you and me. What legislators are doing to strip states and people of their sovereign rights. Or legislation giving states the power to force vaccinate under a declared state of emergency. Do your neighbors understand what is going on? William Lewis Films offers the perfect tools to inform our population about this government's tyrannical shift from a constitutional republic to a despotic democracy. Films like 911 Ripple Effect, Beyond Treason, One Nation Under Siege, Washington You're Fired, Camp FEMA, Enemy of the State, Don't Tread on Me, Blood of Patriots, The Ron Paul Uprising, even 911 in Plain Sight, William's first production, are all available at williamlewisfilms.com. Get your DVDs today at williamlewisfilms.com. Educate against the police state.
When we open our minds to the incredible, unlimited universe, we become participants in the active flow and infinite energy of life. We begin to live a much larger experience. We become free. In the magical universe, there are no coincidences and there are no accidents. You are here. You found Freedomizer Radio. See, the Power in You is about sharing the light of who you are, exploring different points of view, different perspectives on topics for better health for your mind and your body. Join Miss Cookie and me every Monday, Wednesday, and Friday at 10 a.m. and Saturday at 4 p.m. Pacific Time and grow the light of who you are right here at Freedomizer Radio.
Please learn more about Freedomizer Radio by going to freedomizerradio.com and also Facebook us right at freedomizerradio.com. Catch you there.
All right, folks, we're back here with Ron Media Matrix, and I think I'm going to tell you, I need to take a little break here and kind of reshuffle things around before we get ready to cover some news articles with you. So what I'm going to do, I'm going to play a song from Bruce Van Eden, and I'm going to warm my coffee up here and get my list together. And as always, you know, make sure you visit the www.freedomizerradio.com, and you can participate in our chat room there, a lively chat room with Joanne Galton. And we have the flash player on the left-hand side, and if you want to call and make a comment, with one of our guests or one of our hosts, you can call us at 347-324-3704. That's 347-324-3704. So you're always welcome to call in to the show. And before I get rounded up, and I'm going to rearrange my desk here a little bit and warm up my coffee. But anyway, we're going to go to a short music break here, music intermission, and we'll roll out the rest of the show. So we're going to play a little something from Eden. This is from Bruce Van Eden, Dancing Like a Freak. And I'll be right back after the song.
Jump, 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 jump
This is Will back here with Ron's Media Matrix, and we kind of got things realigned here. I'm just about out of propane here. I can see my light is on. So anyway, I was going to come back and cover the news, and that was a really good interview we had with Paul there. So anyway, if you'd like to call in, you can call us at 347-324-3704. And I see we have a few people listening by phone to us out there. And thanks for stopping by, and give a little shout-out to the chat room here. We have Weaslin, Greg in Florida, I believe that's what the abbreviation stands for. And I believe I saw Twilight in there earlier. No, Twilight's not here today. Ah, I see Cheryl's here with us, our station manager. She's here with us. And Chris Jahan. So anyway, we were talking to Paul earlier. I kind of wanted to segue into this article I had about the Euro crisis, and I mentioned how it's not a lot of the mainstream news is mostly really dramatic stuff. They're focused on the election. This who they got, Drew Peterson, you know, they made a big deal out of that. He finally got convicted of murdering one of his ex-wives. So anyway, I was going to talk a little bit about this article from the Telegraph. And as always, you know, to get the news about what's really going on in the United States, you have to go to these papers outside of the United States. And I have this article here. I'll put a short link in the chat room for you. And I'm going to recite this article to you. and maybe we can get a conversation going here. But this is from the Telegraph, and the title of the article is, "The Euro Crisis is Not Over, and It's About to Get Interesting." Supposedly, the Euro crisis is all over. The mighty ECB has spoken. I received triumphalist suggestions from bastions of Euro fanaticism that I should now capitulate. They even suggested that I should send a rebate of fees to my clients and something to Telegraph readers, perhaps. Sorry to disappoint, but I am not remotely contrite. On the contrary, was it not to be expected that Draghi would deliver some sort of bond-buying program? And you can kind of parallel that to what our government is doing in the so-called quantitative easing. They're going to do something very similar. So how many times since the crisis began have we supposedly been given the solution, only to find in the succeeding weeks that it breaks in our hands? What Mario Draghi has done is to deploy the ECB's undoubted firepower to counter breakup risk in the yields on peripheral debt. If the height of the such yields were the essence of the euro problem, then ECB bond buying would indeed be a game changer. But it isn't. High bond yields have been a reaction to the underlying problem, not the cause of it. Indeed, the underlying problem is that it's only partly financial. In several member countries, government finances are perilously weak. But worse than this, the economies show next to no economic growth or even contracting. While this continues, their debt ratios will continue to rise. Yet their costs are stranded way above a competitive level. Consequently, they cannot overcome their problems by increasing net exports. The classic IMF cure always involved doses of austerity combined with the devaluation in order to deliver an export boost to demand. European politicians have administered the first part of this treatment, but the euro has prevented the second. Still, what cannot be sustained won't be. It is unusually unclear, though, where the fatal blow will fall. There will always always a chance that it would come from the bond market. This looks less likely after Draghi's scheme, but still not impossible. So far, Draghi has delivered a big drop in Spanish and Italian yields without actually doing any bond buying. When we get the next dollop of bad economic news from the periphery, he will be obliged to put his, or rather the European taxpayers' money, where his mouth is. Meanwhile, if bond buying is to be sanctioned, the relevant countries have first to apply for assistance. This is not a done deal. If they apply, they must agree to abide by conditions which imply a humiliating loss of sovereignty and yet more austerity. As if that weren't bad enough for Spain, the secession of Catalonia and the Basque country is fast becoming a realistic prospect. In Italy, the technocratic government will soon have to be replaced with a democratically elected successor, which might yet be headed by, you've guessed it, Silvio Berlusconi. That might promise much entertainment, but surely not much fundamental reform, particularly if Mario Draghi's bond-buying machine is supplying much-needed dosh. Meanwhile, the Greek economic situation has deteriorated, and surprise, surprise, Greece has not been able to stick to the conditions laid down in the latest bailout. It will soon need another. Yet last week, the German finance minister said that there will not be a third Greek bailout. In that case, how will Greece manage? We're moving close to the point where Greece is asked to leave the euro, or it sees no alternative but to depart. All along, the euro authorities have worried about the possible financial contagion from such an event. With the Draghi scheme in place, however, if a Greek exit were followed by an attack on other peripheral bond markets, then it would be met by potentially unlimited purchases by the ECB, and that prospect should deter the attack. This knowledge should give the euro authorities confidence in facing up to Greece. Perhaps the real significance of the Draghi plan is to make a Greek exit more likely and more imminent. I've always thought that the biggest threat to the euro from a Greek exit was not financial contagion, but rather it would succeed in restoring decent economic growth. Imagine then the political situation in Spain and Italy, still forced to gulp down Miss Merkel's medicine. That prospect, if not the Greek exit, is still some way off. This week, there are a couple of more immediate obstacles to overcome. On Wednesday, the German Constitutional Court will pronounce on whether the Euro bailout fund is legal. It will probably rule in favor, but you cannot exclude a fudge or a deferral, which will make matters difficult. On the same day, the Dutch will hold an election in which the Euro will figure large. In the backdrop, the Bundesbank broods and fumes. Its president, Jens Weidmann, has not resigned, but he yet might. After the ECB decision, the Bundesbank took the very unusual step of issuing a statement making clear its displeasure and anxiety. It is far from all over, so no refunds, no apologies, and no capitulations. Indeed, I rather suspect that the Euro crisis is about to get interesting. So you can see there in just a few words there, the ECB, much like the Federal Reserve, probably in just a clone of it, is doing the same thing that they're heating up for the election here, is to make a bond buyback by the Federal Reserve. And so it's not going to work in Europe, and it's probably not going to work in the U.S. as we go to further economic decline. But I forgot to turn my coffee pot off, so I'm going to take another quick music break. Sorry about that. But I don't want my coffee to overheat. So I'll be right back at this Don't Jump Off the Cliff by Proofs Van Eden. Thank you. Hi, folks. I'm back. I had to turn on my coffee pot there. I left it going, and I didn't want to burn a hole in the bottom of my coffee pot. But anyway, we were talking about the euro crisis. And it doesn't just seem, you know, it's not going to go away. It's really not. It's just, they talk about what we're going to do in the United States. They kind of lightly announce that we're going to have, they're not going to call it QE3, but it's really going to buy back some bonds, you know, to stimulate the economy. So, I mean, I guess they're just buying it with more counterfeit money funded by the Federal Reserve. But, you know, we're not hearing much about, you know, a lot of people are debating as whether or not there was going to be an attack on Iran previous to the election. And so far, I don't see it before the election. But after the election, things may get nasty. But I did have a couple articles here from, I got one from the CBC. And this is going to be, I'm going to get this one from DP News. And I'm going to share that with you about what Iran is up to. This is from Day Press. I haven't seen this paper before. But anyway, I'm going to share that link with you in the chat room. And let me get a short link here for you. And it looks like Iran is going to attend a meeting. Now, you know, we're hearing a lot about Syria. So the things are kind of intertwined there. But this is from Day Press. Iran to attend the meeting on Syria in Cairo. DP News agencies. Tehran, as the newly appointed UN and Arab League peace envoy on Syria, Lakhdar Brahimi, was to start mission in the Egyptian capital before heading to Damascus. Iran said it was joining officials from Egypt, Saudi Arabia, and Turkey for a four-way contact group meeting in Cairo, looking at ways to calm the conflict in Syria, according to AFP report on Monday. An Iranian report on the contact group meeting on Syria in Cairo had said that the Iranian deputy foreign minister, Hossein Amir Abdullahian, left Tehran for the Egyptian capital to take part in the meeting. Foreign ministry spokesman Rahman Mehman Paris told Iran's Al Alam Arabic language broadcast. Iran's participation in the meeting is within the framework of solving the Syrian crisis and to listening to the Egyptian proposal. Iran will use this opportunity to provide its views in addition to those of the other countries to this group, Mehman Para said. Early on Sunday, Amir Abdullahian told the ISNA news agency on Sunday that Tehran backed Morsi's contact group proposal while criticizing anti-Assad comments Morsi made at a non-aligned summit in Tehran on August 30th. Iran in general backs the political ideas proposed by Mr. Morsi as a rational political solution, Amir Abdullah said. But we expect Mr. Morsi to reflect more before making some comments, he said, adding that Morsi should not take sides and should deal with the Syrian issue realistically. The Iranian report has not been confirmed by Egyptian officials in Cairo. The meeting, if confirmed, would be the first of a regional contact group on Syria proposed by Egypt's new president, Mohamed Morsi, at an August summit of the Organization of Islamic Cooperation in Saudi Arabia that suspended Syria's membership. So you see kind of Iran is trying to get involved in the Syrian conflict. And in the meantime, we have Turkey as well. So realistically, Iran and Egypt are enemies. And how this is coming about, I don't know. But it looks like there's rumblings in the Middle East as we head into the national election here in the United States. Whether the United States will make any firm decision on whether or not to attack Iran isn't clear yet, but it looks like the our government at large is posed to put us to sleep with the news of the economy and the Drew Peterson, court case and all these other things that they put up as distractions to just put us to sleep. There's no real news other than maybe gas is going up, the economy is getting better. Ben Bernanke is buying back some bonds, and so is Europe, but they don't tell us about that. But the two economies are aligned to doing the same thing when we're headed for an eventual breakdown on the economy, the currency. But anyway, I thought I would bring that out, as the mainstream media doesn't really pay attention to what's going on in the rest of the world. So anyway, we're going to go to our commercial break here and get our sponsors on there and let their voice be heard, as we need a little support from this guy. But we're going to go ahead and go to my break here, and we're going to hear a little bit from, let's see, we haven't played yet. Okay, we're going to hear from the Sovereign Newspaper and Liberty Stickers and a couple of the, we got some new show hosts, and I've looked through the list here, and the ones I haven't played. So we're going to get around to that, and then we'll be back with more news right after these commercial messages.
Want to spread awareness to your neighbors, family, and friends about what is going on in our country today? It may be things you already know, like the large number of FEMA camps spread around this country to lock up citizens like you and me. What legislators are doing to strip states and people of their sovereign rights. Or legislation giving states the power to force vaccinate under a declared state of emergency. Do your neighbors understand what is going on? William Lewis Films offers the perfect tools to inform our population about this government's tyrannical shift from a constitutional republic to a despotic democracy. Films like 911 Ripple Effect, Beyond Treason, One Nation Under Siege, Washington You're Fired, Camp FEMA, Enemy of the State, Don't Tread on Me, Blood of Patriots, The Ron Paul Uprising, even 911 in Plain Sight, William's first production, are all available at williamlewisfilms.com. Get your DVDs today at williamlewisfilms.com. Educate against the police state.
You know the Constitution like the back of your hand. You've read books, listened to podcasts, attended lectures, surfed websites, and watched videos. You've made liberty your life's goal, but something seems to be missing. Stickers from LibertyStickers.com. Exercise your freedom of speech with the world's most dangerous bumper stickers. That's LibertyStickers.com. But wait, there's more. You can buy Liberty stickers wholesale. Get them for 99 cents each when you put 100 or more in your shopping cart in any combination. Sell them or give them away. They're great for gun shows, flea markets, fairs, outreach, and more. Earn extra money, promote freedom, and spread the word. Need custom stickers, labels, or decals for your organization or business? Liberty Stickers makes them. Go to LibertyStickers.com to order or call 877-873-9626. LibertyStickers.com, the world's most dangerous stickers.
Hey there, Freedomizers. This is JC from the Sports Lounge. Join us for 3 hours on Saturdays as we take a break from politics to discuss sports at FreedomizerRadio.com. Come and join us each Saturday from 9 a.m. to noon Pacific, noon to 3 p.m. Eastern.
Our new show is dedicated to prophecy and our survival in times of great disasters. Greetings, I'm Mars, commander of the Watcher Society. We are a private think tank of the most elite thinkers on the end times ever. Welcome to the Watcher's Prophecy Radio on Freedomizer. Our show highlights the end of days, as seen through the scriptures, and how to prepare for the events we see in the news. We will inform you like no other show on the events occurring now in Bible prophecy. Come join us for the unveiling of tyranny in the end of days forecast. What you can do about it.
You are listening to Freedomizer Radio, where freedomizers freedomize freedom.
Hi, folks. We're back here with more Ron's Media Matrix. I'm your host, Ron, and I was reading, covering a few news articles here from my list, and I was talking about Iran, because we're not hearing much about it on the mainstream media. Now, I was mentioning how the there's a meeting in Cairo, Turkey, Syria, and Saudi Arabia, I believe. But anyway, I want to skip over to a couple of other things. And I want to get into this article from blacklistednews.com regarding the face recognition systems, which you probably haven't heard on Fox News. But we're going to jump to that, and you want to check this out. This is from blacklistednews.com. Get my tongue tied there. I'll give you the short link here in the chat room. Okay. Tap on that. Can't select it. There we go. We'll do it like that. We'll get a short link there. Tap that. This is from blacklistednews.com. And we'll put the article in there for you to. You can read along with me if you like. This is actually short from RT. FBI begins installation of $1 billion face recognition system across America. This is published September 8, 2012. Birthmarks be damned. The FBI has officially started rolling out a state-of-the-art face recognition project that will assist in their effort to accumulate and archive information about each and every American at a cost of $1 billion. The Federal Bureau of Investigation has reached a milestone in the development of their Next Generation Identification, abbreviated NGI program, and is now implementing the intelligence database in unidentified locales across the country. New Scientist reports in an article this week. The FBI first outlined the project back in 2005, explaining to the Justice Department in an August 2006 document that their new system will eventually serve as an upgrade to the current Integrated Automated Fingerprint Identification System, abbreviated IAFIS, that keeps track of citizens with criminal records across America. The NGI program is a compilation of initiatives that will either improve or expand existing biometric identification services, its administrator explained to the Department of Justice at the time, adding that the project will accommodate increased information processing and sharing demand in support of anti-terrorism. The NGI program office mission is to reduce terrorist and criminal activities by improving and expanding biometric identification and criminal history information services through research, evaluation, and implementation of advanced technology within the IAFIS environment. The agency insists, as a result of the NGI initiatives, the FBI will be able to provide services to enhance interoperability between stakeholders at all levels of government, including local, state, federal, and international partners. In doing as such, though, the government is now going ahead with the linking a database of images and personally identifiable information of anyone in their records with departments around the world, thanks to technology that makes fingerprint tracking seem like kids' stuff. According to their 2006 report, the NGI program utilizes specialized requirements in the latent services
facial recognition and multimodal biometrics areas that will allow the FNUBI to establish a terrorist fingerprint identification system that is compatible with other systems, increase the accessibility and number of IAFIS terrorist fingerprint records, and provide latent palm print search capabilities. Is that just all, though? During a 2010 presentation made by the FBI's Biometric Center of Intelligence, the agency identified why facial recognition technology needs to be embraced. Specifically, the FBI said that the technology could be used for identifying subjects in public data sets, as well as conducting automated surveillance at lookout locations, and tracking subject movements, meaning MGI is more than just a database of mugshots mixed up with fingerprints. The FBI has admitted that their intent with the technology surpasses just searching for criminals, but includes spectacular surveillance capabilities. Together, it's a system unheard of outside of science fiction. The scientist reports that a 2010 study found technology used by NGI to be accurate in picking out suspects from a pool of 1.6 million mugshots 92% of the time. The system was tested on a trial basis in the state of Michigan earlier this year and has already been cleared for pilot runs in Washington, Florida, and North Carolina. Now, according to this week's New Scientist report, the full rollout of the program has begun, and the FBI expects its intelligence infrastructure to be in place across the United States by 2014. In 2008, the FBI announced that it awarded Lockheed Martin Transportation and Security Solutions, one of the Defense Department's most favored contractors, with the authorization to design, develop, test, and deploy the NGI system. Thomas E. Bush, the third, the former FBI agent who helped develop the NGI system requirements, tells NextGov.com. And let me go here to the switchboard. We have a few listeners there. And I'll continue with this article here. The idea was to be able to plug and play with these identifiers and biometrics, with those items being collected without much oversight being admitted, though putting the personal facts pertaining to millions of Americans into the hands of some playful Pentagon staffers only begins to open up civil liberties issues. Jim Harper, Director of Information Policy at the Cato Institute, adds to NextGov that the investigators pair facial recognition technology with publicly available social networks in order to build bigger profiles. Facial recognition is more accurate with Google or Facebook because they will have anywhere from a half dozen to a dozen pictures of an individual, whereas I imagine the FBI has one or two mugshots, he says. When these files are then fed to law enforcement agencies on local, federal, and international levels, intelligence databases that include everything from close-ups of eyeballs and irises to online interests could be shared among offices. The FBI expects the NGI system to include as many as 14 million photographs by the time the project is in full swing in only 2 years. But the pace of technology and the new connections constantly created by law enforcement agencies could allow for a database that dwarfs that estimate, as RT reported earlier this week. The city of Los Angeles now considers photography in public space suspicious and authorizes LAPD officers to file reports if they have reason to believe a suspect is up to no good. Those reports, which may not necessarily involve any arrests, crimes, charges, or even interviews with the suspect, can then be filed, analyzed, stored, and shared with federal and local agencies connected across the country to a massive data fusion centers. Similarly, live video transmissions from thousands of surveillance cameras across the country are believed to be sent to the same fusion center as part
of trap wires, a global eye-in-the-sky endeavor that RT first exposed earlier this year. Facial recognition creates acute privacy concerns that fingerprints do not. U.S. Senator Al Franken, Democrat of Minnesota, told the Senate Judiciary Committee Subcommittee on Privacy, Technology, and Law earlier this year. When someone has your face print, they can get your name, they can find your social networking account, and they can find and track you in the street, in the stores you visit, in the government buildings you enter, and the photos your friends post online. In his own testimony, Carnegie Mellon University professor Alessandro Acquisti said to Senator Franken, the convergence of face recognition, online social networks, and data mining has made it possible to use publicly available data and inexpensive technologies to produce sensitive inferences merely starting from an anonymous space. Face recognition, like other information technologies, can be a source of both benefits and costs to society and its individual members. Professor Acquisti added, however, the combination of face recognition, social networks data, and data mining can significantly undermine our current notions and expectations of privacy and anonymity. With the latest report suggesting the NGI program is now a reality in America, though it might be too late to try and keep the FBI from interfering with seemingly every aspect of life in the U.S., both private and public. As of July 18, 2012, the FBI reports the NGI program is on scope, on schedule, on cost, and 60% deployed. So, yeah. So, something else you don't hear about on the mainstream media, but coming to a city street corner near you. And you can see, it looks like we got a caller here. We're going to put on 646-808, area code 646. I believe that's Sarah.
Hey, Ron.
Hey, is that Sarah?
Yeah.
Hey, Sarah, yeah, well, what you got for us?
So what do you think? You think they're, in addition to the other stuff that they're going to do with the information, do you think that they're going to, like, be rounding us up? They're selling us off as slaves somewhere. They're trying to get as many numbers together because they're as collateral, you know, all the money that we owe other people. I mean, they're using us as collateral. They're trying to get a head count, like for pigs or
something. Yeah,
That's one reason, right? You think so? I do, too. Yeah, not too funny, though.
Yeah.
I can't believe this. I mean, really, like, it's like Gestapo. It really is. This, I mean, it's 9/11 in New York, but, But I mean, they're really here. Like, the drones are back. They were here. They come for certain big events, and then they release even more police and special police and that kind of thing, you know, with each holiday. Kind of like the gas. Remember that the gas crisis started with in the 70s, and then ever since then, you know, actually, you know what, it's like a bad diet. It's like the yo-yo diet. It's like, you know, it like goes up, and it goes back down a little bit, but then goes way up more next time. And goes down a little bit, and then goes way more next time, right?
So it's incremental. Are they using the drones now at big events up there in your area?
You know, I don't know, but here's another thing I want to share. It's about this face recognition. And here's another question. I actually have two things to share about the face recognition. One of them is, like, let's say you have a good point, but it actually opens up a bag of worms. Let's take somebody, a really big icon, whose photograph is worth money, okay?
Mm-hmm.
So is that person, does that person also give away their photograph free to this to the FBI? Or does the FBI have to pay something? I think they should have to pay something. Don't you?
Well, I don't know. You know,
like Barbara Streisand.
Well, I don't know what the policy is, but once you post an image of Facebook, they essentially have rights to it.
But I understand the facial recognition is not Facebook. It's the FBI. So, I'm saying, I mean, I would assume that they want as many photos, as many faces as possible. So, and well, that raises another question, because it leads me to the next issue. I listened to this really interesting thing. It's a podcast, and I really don't remember who it was, and I wish I did, but it's a pretty impressive, interesting life, and it involves photography and internet and things like that. And so, because he was expert at that, you know who was interested in him. So, but he seemed very creative. Anyway, what he had was some really great tips for what are the flaws in that system, considering what kind of a photographic system it is, because photography over its evolution has really changed, you know, in its, for lack of a better word, because I'm not that savvy in it, changed its modes, you know, its frequencies. You know, there was a time when it was done with plates. It's just gone to digital. So anyway, he had some great tips. I just YouTube it if anybody's interested. Sorry, I can't remember the name of it. But it came sort of randomly, but it was really, really cool. Really interesting. Like the hair. I'll give the first one. Hair is, of course, the biggest one to change. But it can be done. Anyway, they're trying to move fast, you know. I would suggest it, you know. If anybody's listed, TA, any FBI guys are listening, yeah, move it on fast. Cause...
Well, what I kind of want to mention, though, when I worked at the casino, it was over 8 or 10 years ago. I was posted somewhere, and some vendors had approached me and were looking for one of their contacts in surveillance. And so I talked to them. I said, well, who do you want to see? And maybe I can direct you to them. And anyway, he gave me the card, and this was 10 years ago. It was a third-party vendor, and they had a facial recognition software, and they wanted to do their pitch to the casino surveillance people. And so I thought, well, that's been over 10 years ago.
Mm-hmm.
And to think what they might have now. But it's been very quiet. You don't hear much about it. You see the cameras going up and being installed, but nobody really talks about facial recognition. And so I would think that in this period of time, they've highly refined it. I knew the casino used it, but nobody ever talked about it. But
not
the people,
only that.
They would,
keep going. I remember.
Anyway, the people that they kicked out regularly are the people that they didn't want around no more, along with the people on the floor of the eyes and ears of the casino. But they were able to, a person would just get off the bus, and once he got inside the door, it wasn't 5 minutes later that they called a couple of guards to haul him out. And I believe this is due to the cameras going, oh, hey, and the people, the operators in the surveillance room, would get a little flag and say, yeah, that's that guy. We want him out of here. Just that quick, you know? I mean, the cameras are always watching.
Yeah, and that's why I love the title of your show, because I think you're right. You brought up a good point. You know, we don't really hear about that so much anymore yet. It's important, you know, and it's part of it. And I think the information is really valuable right now. Like, one of the things when you were talking about, you're right, it's like that was going on 10 years ago, and now what's going on is, especially because of Photoshop developments and all the other developments, you know, they can take your, I've seen them do this, they take your video or your film, and they place, they don't even, it's like they just overlay what's called a meme on it, you know? So you can take a face, and then you put a meme on it. So my real point is, who's watching the watchers? See? So what they're counting on, that nobody knows about photography. They're counting on that nobody knows the details about the memes. You know, so that if ever it's brought up to your attention, because the FBI originally, they were supposedly they're hired by our country to protect us. So I'm confused about why it's even, you know, I have to worry about if I said that out loud. That's gone crazy. And it's the only way to not be crazy about it, I say, is to do what is not in that realm, which is fact, logic, but fact. And to know, like, say, for example, excuse me, you know, how do I know and prove to me first that this is, you have not overlaid a meme on top of this photo. And where are we going to look at the photo? In hard copy? And on whose screen? You see, those kind
yeah.
of things, you know, right?
Well, yeah,
you know?
Like say, you know,
not,
as you mentioned.
Not level-headed, not get so, you know, over the top and without taking the pill, so to speak, and be devoid of all emotion completely, because our creativity is an important mix with that, and I think that
mm-hmm.
that is something that they hate because they don't understand, period. They, you know, I don't know who they is. It's some sort of an archetype at this point, and the mystery person, you know, who knows? Mystery people in our lives.
Well, you mentioned who's watching the watches, and, you know, even though that the authorities, or what do you want to call them, are accumulating all these photos and, you know, tying a name and an address and all that to it. But as you mentioned, watching the watches, once this system gets built up and they're able to track all these photographs and all these people across social network and right down to the surveillance camera on the street, who's to say that the people's the hands that this data is in, you always have that element of corruption. Let's for example, say that one of the chief watchers has some dirty laundry and he knows Joe Smith knows about it. So why don't we plant some drugs on Joe Smith and get him arrested so he can cover his tracks? I mean, you know, that's what it gets down to. And then who's to say they start grouping people, even though they may not be criminals. Say they're members of the Hooter Tree and all this stuff. And you got they want to set them up, so they come up with reasons to arrest them and harass them.
Yeah, I understand. You know that they don't really seem to need a reason at all. And in that case, one needs to know, I think, about the law, because everybody who does and really knows it seems to be okay. Not that we should be being harassed at all. But you see, I guess, you know, when I say that last phrase, I think it's maybe not so, I think they have, if I were drawing it, you know, in cartoon form, it'd be like there are the watchers, okay? And those
mm-hmm.
are like the actual police thing. But then there are, and what I'm trying to say in terms of photography, and even here with the law, and that's why this is so difficult, I think, for all of us, is we're really being challenged. We're like in doctoral school for being the philosopher kings and queens. Like, we're having to learn everything about everything, because what gets said to us is that, oh, it's the watchers, and yes, it is, but actually, let's calm down and then take a look at really what's involved. Like, say, for example, this facial recognition. Well, what is it? Photography. Okay, see, the more we know about the actual model is what you would use it, or paradigm is the word I'm wanting to use.
Paradigm,
but,
yeah.
That then goes into a specific form, you know, like a camera or a, or a handcuff and a jail. Or the law. That's another form of it. So we have to, like, sort of get into that behind the form in some way, yet still in the form. Because, I don't know, whenever I really just take it slowly, and I'm not a lawyer, you know? But if
yeah.
I take it slowly, I swear to God, even I can do it. You know, I'm going like, okay, so, I mean, I can't, trust me, like, no, I would be... Yes, maybe, yes. We have to be. See, that's it. I'm starting to see that there's an energetic sort of thing going on, for lack of a better term. I just want to, that is a positive, almost negative charge with everything, every day. And so, you know, I'm starting to feel myself being sort of led into, I'm starting to recognize when I'm feeling like I'm being led into something dark, because who would choose to go down something dark? I don't think so. So,
well, Sarah, I'm gonna put you on mute. I'm gonna make my closing comments, and I got to make way for Sound Doctrine Ministries. So, I'll put you on hold, and you can call into this show. But I want to make a few announcements before I wrap up the show here.
All right, that's great, Ryan.
Okay.
Thanks for letting me share. Good to talk to you.
Okay.
Bye.
Bye. All right, folks, I just looked at the clock, and I don't know whether my watch is right or if my my TV box is right. But anyway, we have Sound Doctor Message coming up next, and I want to make a few announcements. Next week on Ron's Media Matrix, next Tuesday, that'll be the 18th, 10 a.m. to 12 p.m., I'm going to have Kip Adada. And if you've never heard of Kip Adada, you can go on YouTube and look up the just look up Wet Dream. And he did a novelty song several years ago. It was on the Dr. Demento show. So we're going to be talking to him, and he's a really nice guy, a communicator. And we're going to talk to Kip Adada from Wet Dream, cruising down the Gulf Stream, thought I had a wet dream. And we're going to talk about some of the things he's done in his life. So anyway, I'm going to wrap the show up here. I'm going to close up with my intro, make it into an outro. And we're going to make way for Sound Doctor Ministries. And stay tuned, and hope everybody will join me next week for my interview with Kip Adada. And so let me get down and wrap things up here. And we'll see you next week. So anyway, thanks for listening. Thanks for calling in, Sarah.
The future is a hefty responsibility and not one that we take lightly, but then taking things lightly has never been what Hefty is about. That's why we've created the Hefty Renew program that turns hard to recycle plastics into valuable resources like park benches and building materials. To participate, simply fill up an orange Hefty Renew bag with accepted items, tie it up, and drop it in with your regular recycling. That's it. It's that easy. It's time to rethink recycling with Renew. Particular valued resources may vary by geography. More info available at heftyrenew.com.
Hey guys, it is Ryan. I'm not sure if you know this about me, but I'm a bit of a fun fanatic when I can. I like to work, but I like fun too. It's a thing. And now the truth is out there. I can tell you about my favorite place to have fun. Chumba Casino. They have hundreds of social casino style games to choose from with new games released each week. You can play for free anytime, anywhere. And each day brings a new chance to collect daily bonuses. So join me in the fun. Sign up now at ChumbaCasino.com.
No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. See terms and conditions. 18 plus.